Hey guys, my guest tonight, Lon Strickler, is going to be talking about cryptids and other creatures. We'll be right back. Grab your popcorn and snacks. Find a comfy spot, take a seat or lie down, and let me transport you to a place of fantasy, ghost stories, ancient legends, odd creatures, alien encounters, and other magical topics. You may even decide to join the conversation. From faraway lands to your own backyard, with a small dash of pixie dust, turn out the lights and open your minds. The journey is about to begin. Good evening, everybody. How's everyone doing? I think you said great. I'm doing great. It's hot. As you can tell, probably by the hum in the back, and the hum shouldn't be too bad. I got my window AC on. We peaked 95 today. So it's getting there. But the thing is, it's just weird this month because we're going to be up to like 102 this week, and then it's going to kind of level off around the 90s, and then it's going to drop back down to 83 in a week and a half. So I don't get it. Global warming thing is kind of freaky, if you believe in that stuff. My name is Charlotte. I'm going to be your host for the next hour. I'm also the owner of the California Haunts Paranormal Investigation Team based out of Sacramento, California. We're 45 strong up and down the state, which means if you have a paranormal need or you think you have a paranormal need, we can get to you. It might take us a while, but we can get to you because California is a huge state. But in the case that we can't get to you right away, we do have mediums on staff who can phone you and talk to you about what may or may not be going on in your business or residence. And sometimes, I'm not saying all the time, sometimes depending on what it is, they can calm the energy down before we get out there. So it's kind of easier on you. It never takes us more than 2 to 3 days to get out there, though. Because, like I said, we're pretty centralized in different cities up and down the state. That being said, if you're watching from Facebook tonight, and I know a lot of you are, please feel free to follow if you haven't done so already, especially if you like what you see in here tonight. That would be great. I would be very thankful. And be sure to leave us this thumbs up. Happy face, those happy heart things that I can't do with my hand. And comment. Comment in the chat room. Because what that does is that puts us up higher in what they call the FYP, which for people that don't know what that means, is the For You page. So that means Facebook will suggest this show to others. And that's what we're trying to do, is spread the word about the show, right? That's the whole thing. That's my whole, if you like the show, share it with 5 people, think that I do at the end. Same thing with YouTube. We've got more than 950 videos sitting over there, all of this show. I'm a journalist, photojournalist. I like to change it up, so we're not always going to have paranormal topics. In fact, as an example, yesterday we had an attorney for John Wayne Gacy on, and so we had a nice conversation with her. I like to change it up. So what I've done with all those videos, because when you get over on the YouTube page, it's very confusing. So what I've done with all those videos is I've put them into folders and categories so you can find stuff. So instead of searching through a million things, because I know I go in there to search, it gives me a headache. You just go, oh, Nancy Math. Just click on that, and you can pull up everything that she's done on the show. Pretty much everything she's done on the show. Or cryptids, like for tonight's show. This will go into a cryptid file in about a week or two when I archive it through. And you guys can go to cryptids and find one, and maybe you need to listen to the show again. You never know. So, yeah, please be sure to do that. And if you haven't subscribed and you're over at YouTube, please do so. We're trying to build our numbers up. We're getting there. We're climbing. We're climbing that subscription ladder. That would be great, really great. And the same rules, thumbs up, happy faces, things like that. Just show us some love. Chat in the chat room. Twitch, I know we're over there too. Same thing. TikTok, they all work the same. One quick thing of note, you see my ticker at the bottom. We're on a funding game right now. We're trying to finish off our bills for the month. We're $60 short. And if you guys could help us a little bit with that would be great. We work at... As far as the paranormal group goes, and what we do here, we make no money off of this. It's almost a working nonprofit. So everything that we get for donation goes back in to pay the bills for this and for the paranormal group. So it's not like I'm pocketing it and taking off on vacation. I don't do that. The whole point is to keep us on the air and keep our internet going. So if you could help us out, that would be great. You don't have to. It's not required. That would be paypal.me/CaliforniaHaunts or Venmo. Just Venmo and California Haunts. That's all you have to put in. Okay? No one's required to do any of that. It's just, to, you know, if you could help me out, that would be great. I'm just trying to keep the show on and keep the show going. Tonight, one of my favorite people is coming on. I met Lon on Facebook, and he has been on several times. We've had him on before, obviously. And I'd like to say we're pretty good friends. And he fascinates me. I love it. He studies cryptids and other unknown creatures. And it's fun to talk to him. And I think he's got some new stories to tell us and stuff tonight. So I'll let him talk about himself a little bit. And then we can get into some cryptids and other things. Here we go. How you doing?
Getting in there.
You look good.
Thank you.
Tell us about you, sir.
Oh, boy. Well, I've been involved with paranormal, I guess, for a little over 45 years now. I'm an intuitive. I've always been an intuitive, even when I was younger. But I started getting involved with cryptids after I had a Bigfoot encounter back in 1981 in Maryland. Mm-hmm. And that kind of sparked it all, and I, you know, from that point forward, most of what I've been doing is cryptids. So I do hauntings and such as well. Mm-hmm. But it's mostly been local, but we branched out as time has gone on, and I do have a team, the Phantoms of Monsters 14 research team. We've got about 20. Boots on the ground investigators that helped me out, and we helped each other out. And we've also got about 35 affiliates nationwide. Nice. As well. And we kind of look into a little bit of everything. And, you know, the big case that we had been involved with, I guess it's been maybe 13 years now, is the Chicago Mothman phenomenon. Which just keeps going. And we're at the point now where that we have about 160 or more sightings, encounters that we believe are legitimate. Myself, Tobias Whalen, and Manuel Navarrete have done most of the investigations of this phenomena. But it continues on, and we've been pretty busy off and on with this thing. It kind of comes in spurts, but it keeps us busy. And then more locally, we've been involved with mostly cryptid canines and Bigfoot and a few other things. So I live around the Gettysburg, South Central Pennsylvania area. So it's pretty busy around here.
So when you talk about cryptid canines, what exactly are we talking about? Are we talking about werewolves? Are we talking about dogmen? Or what exactly?
Oh, anything that's cryptid and canine. I mean, we get several types, upright quadrupeds. There's some variations. I guess the word that most people want to use is dogman, but I consider dogman to be a quadruped. Kind of a large animal, more like a, it built like a hyena, but pretty good size. We get a few of those reports around here in Pennsylvania, but mostly we get the Dwayo upright canine, biped type of large, very large canines. And, some people try to equate them to werewolves or lichens or something to that effect, but we do get quite a few of those. This is an area that's traditionally known for cryptid canine sightings and encounters. And we actively have been looking at about 4 cases currently, and within maybe a 50 to 80 mile radius all around the area, South Central down into Maryland. You just never know. There's several investigators who are local that work with me. We work together investigating different aspects of not only cryptids, but paranormal as well. So, yeah, we keep pretty busy.
So sounds like it. When you investigate these cryptid canines, what's the process? Because you guys are, you know, unless you're there when the sighting happens, how long after the sightings do you guys usually get out there to check them out?
You know, it just depends. I mean, a lot of us are pretty busy, but we would try to get to the location as quick as possible, especially if it's something that continues on. Many times these are fleeting sightings. These are sightings that somebody may have that they see for a matter of seconds, and then that's it. Uh-huh. And if we, you know, we will go to the area, try to map it out, try to get an idea of what's going on, look at the historical sightings in the area. But, you know, all you can really do is just look at, you know, go to the locations and talk to the witnesses and do what you can as far as trying to get information on what we're dealing with. It's not really much of anything you can do, like a haunting, to move right. things on or to calm things down. These creatures, and I do believe that most cryptids are interdimensional beings, even mm-hmm. Bigfoot. I mean, I think there are some indigenous Bigfoot. But I think for the most part, the cryptid world is an interdimensional, non-earthbound world. And and just like what's been going on with the winged humanoids and the Mothman type sightings, I think that's all interdimensional for the most part, or some type of portal travel. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. When we talk about the canines, because I'm currently reading on Sundays, I'm reading a book from the 1800s. Written by a Anglican priest about werewolves.
Hmm.
It's really quite informative because he's going all around the world. He talks about the ones in Norway, you know, and he right now we're going into Central Europe with it. What is the difference between a werewolf and, say, a dogman?
Well, traditionally, a werewolf would be a human that shapeshifts somehow. Either lycanthropy or some other type of possession, or maybe even a mental illness where this human thinks that they are possessed somehow with the spirit of a dog or mm-hmm. of a canine. And to the point where physically they can change. I mean, a lot of the lore came, of course, from the old world, and especially around here and with the sightings we get here. Mm-hmm. Most of the people who came here and settled were from Germany. And that was part of their tradition. And when these cryptids started showing up on their farms, they started reporting them, more so down in Maryland. In Western Maryland, we've been getting a lot, you know, over the years, we've had a lot of sightings. And those sightings have been going on for almost 120, 30 years. And we're still getting them. I mean, people still report them. The traditional lycan or werewolf is a transitional type of being that traditionally is supposed to be shapeshifted from some type of from a human into some type of canine, mm-hmm. and they're usually always upright, but there are quadruped variations as well. So I think a lot of what we deal with. Around here in particular and throughout Pennsylvania, because we do a lot of investigations throughout Pennsylvania of what we call the lichens. But we do get a lot of variations. I mean, even quadrupeds, some of these beings look like almost like a hyena with a wolf's head, the slope back. And many times it's got the spotted fur, but very muscular. And traditionally, I think that's what people may believe or they may have called the dog man, although that's what we classified as a team. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's no real specific classifications of this type of phenomena, but, you know, because we have gotten all types of variations, so we do the best we can with it.
When you talk about lichens, people may not understand what that is. Could you explain that?
Well, basically, lichens is an abbreviation for lycanthropy, a shapeshifter. Many times, if you think the movies like the Underworld series lichens and the werewolves, the lichens and the vampires and such. You know, many times the descriptions we get of these upright canines are very similar to what's in the movie. In those movies, anywhere from 8 to 10 foot in height, huge, almost like Anubis type jackal looks, more so than that of a wolf. But they are very, very huge, very muscular, very thin waist, sparse hair for the most part. But we don't really have much aggression of in with these things. I mean, many times they do stand their ground, but they seem to avoid aggression, avoid contact. Many times you'll hear about Bigfoot having some type of ability to connect with the witness and try to get them to back off, some type of either psychic abilities or such. And it happens as well with these canines. We've had several hunters who have actually walked up on these things, and for whatever reason, these creatures seem to warn them without really any aggression, and they just lower their weapons and back off. So, yeah, I mean, that's what basically a lichen is, or what we call a lichen.
Cool. When you talk about them being interdimensional, what exactly do you mean?
Well, I mean that they are not indigenous. In other words, they are here for a period of time, but very shortly, very brief. We do believe that most cryptids are reside on another plane, another existence of some type of linear dimension as opposed to our Earth plane, and that they have the abilities to move in and out. There have been several examples of, in particular, the upright canines here in Pennsylvania, and many times in the Chicago area with these winged humanoids, where people have literally seen these things just disappear into thin air and vice versa, just suddenly appear to manifest. We don't necessarily know how or where or the mechanism behind that, but we do believe that there are some areas in particular where these things do kind of manifest. I mean, I know in the Chicago area, we have looked deeply into the areas around the O'Hara International, in that southwest section of the International, of the airport, around the cemetery and in the other areas where people have seen a lot of these creatures now. Unfortunately, we haven't gotten any types of photographs or any type of discernible photographic evidence. 99% of our evidence is anecdotal, but the witnesses are fairly convinced of what they saw and how what happened in the incident, and seem to react to it. Many times they're very fearful and also scared that when they do come forward, it may lead to them having an encounter again. I don't know if that's an imprinted fear or what is, but they do seem hesitant at some points. But fortunately, we have had people who have come forward and have gone on record and have told us what they have encountered.
I would think it would be difficult to get a photo. I mean, because it happens so quickly, and even with a cell phone, to get the camera up and get the right lighting you need to take a photo of the thing. I would think that's why there's no photo evidence.
Well, that's it. I mean, people just don't realize. I mean, you're out, you're somewhere, and, your phone's in your pocket, and this thing shows up, and by the time the shock wears off, you think, I got a camera. I'll grab it and try to focus. Well, this thing's gone by then. The sightings that we have of these winged humanoids are very fleeting, usually less than 10 seconds, if that much. And I do believe after all the accounts and such that we've looked into and talked to people, I think they do have an ability to show themselves a certain people, for whatever reason. I mean, there have been instances where they have been in huge crowds and just a one person or two people see it. Now, how do you explain that? That's hard to explain. So, you know, there's other aspects that tend to make you believe that there's some supernatural aspects to them. And so as well with these other cryptids. I mean, it's just not all flesh and blood, you know, like it is out in the Pacific Northwest or down around the Gulf or in Florida, where those creatures do seem to be indigenous creatures. But I think for the most part that they've got supernatural abilities to allow them to move in and out.
Very fascinating. Do you think, I mean, like you say, nobody really knows why certain people will see them and certain people aren't. It could be, you know, people like yourself who's sensitive to stuff, people like me that's sensitive, and you just hit it at the right, like you say, if they're moving interdimensionally, maybe it's a case where the mind just isn't in that right spot at the right time, you know, dimension-wise, and they're able to see these things.
Yeah, I don't think it's mass hysteria or something where there's overall thought form manifestations or something like that, like a poltergeist. But I think it's I think these creatures are flesh and blood, but they have an ability somehow to manifest into a flesh and blood being from somewhere else. I mean, we just really don't understand that yet, but it does seem from the evidence that we have collected and some of the stories that we have and some of the encounters that we have documented that is the case.
And when you think about some of the stories of Sasquatch, and there's always like a blue orb or a blue light people see before it appears or after it appears, it makes sense.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, we've had other cryptids where that blue flash of light does appear. We've had it with Chicago as well, where something will suddenly appear, and there have been blue lights seen. We had one instance where it was in a park in Rosemont, Chicago, which is just east of O'Hare International, where the witness, who was a school teacher, happened to be out late at night just walking around trying to, she couldn't sleep, so she was out in the local park, and she happened to see this winged being under a light, and it just suddenly, I mean, after a blue flash, and this thing showed up, and then there was another humanoid gray light, like a gray light, alien type humanoid with, and then two females that looked human. And as she observed them for a matter of seconds, they just, the blue light appeared again. The other beings left. They, you know, they vanished, and the winged being took off in flight. So I you know, and we have heard other manifestations where blue lights have been involved. Well, and also alien. I mean, of course, I've been involved with some alien encounters and also abductions where that same blue light effect does seem to occur, where they do manifest after a blue light. And when they vanish, there's a lot of times a blue light involved with it as well.
You know, in the area that you're in, because, you know, like you mentioned, Northern California and Oregon and all that stuff on the West Coast, you know, where Sasquatch is seen. Oh, I'm just going to say almost all the time, because, I mean, they're so frequent. The sightings are so frequent up here.
Yeah.
How frequent are the sightings in your area for these other cryptids?
Not as frequent as out there. But, you know, Pennsylvania is well known for Bigfoot sightings. But, you know, as time goes on and more people are less fearful about coming forward, there's less inhibition about it now, of course, with, you know, cryptids being shown on TV here and there and paranormal TV. I think people are more inclined to report things they see instead of just holding back on them. You know, as time goes on, I think almost every state in the continental United States has had at least one Bigfoot report or some type of cryptid report. But of course, there are hot spots. Pennsylvania is pretty active, and other states as well. It's just, you know, it just you just never know what's going to show up.
Right, right. Let's talk a little bit about the winged creatures, like the Mothman. Have there been any recent sightings of that at all that you know of?
Yeah, we had some reported to us. I'm going to pull up here the latest one.
Sure.
Just give me a chance to do that. But we had a report about 2 weeks ago of a sighting, an encounter. Actually, this guy who reported it has had two previous sightings. And the last encounter shook him up so bad, he reported it. He contacted me. And I talked to him. He sent me a report. Then later on, I contacted Tobias, who lives in southern Wisconsin, and he contacted him as well. So let me see here. Yeah, it was his last sighting was April 29th of this year, where a huge bat-winged humanoid was encountered by the witness. And the same witness had two previous experiences with the same creature in 2023. And the three incidents were all within a 20-mile radius. He contacted me. His name was Matt Sexton, so he wasn't fearful about coming forward. He said, I'm skeptical and usually think there's a logical explanation, but he just can't find one for his experiences. So he said it started about a year ago. Route 30 near Hinckley, Illinois, which is in DeKalb County. He gave the exact location where it occurred. He said what was going on. He was in his truck at around 1:30 a.m. and he saw a large branch of a tree falling, and it caught his attention. And when he looked up, he saw what was a huge humanoid covered with mouse brown fur, had clawed feet and webbing between its legs, and bat-like wings with semi-separated arms from the wings. Had an elongated face, swooped down in front of the truck and was gone. He said, well, he could have been maybe a bird, a large bird or a crane, so he didn't give it much thought. The second time he saw it was a few miles from that same location on Route 39, about a month later. He said, said it looked the same. Again, he thought it may have been a big bird, but he just wasn't sure. And he kind of, put it out of his mind. So on April 29th of this year, he said he was going to work on McGurra Road near Caneville, Illinois, which is just west of Chicago. Right. So we're considering, I guess, as part of the Chicago sightings. And he said there was a small bridge that goes over a creek. And he said when his front tires crossed over the bridge, something either came up from underneath the bridge or swooped from his right side and hit the bumper of his truck. He said he reacted and swerved into the oncoming lane, almost lost control of the vehicle. He said he got a very good look at it. He said it was the same thing he had seen a year earlier. And when he corrected and his direction, this thing came up over his hood from right to left, and he saw it in the air. And he said it was literally the most horrifying thing he'd ever seen in his life. Came down once more over and on the roof of his car or truck. At that point, he said he hit the gas and pulled his firearm. Now, this is the first time we've ever had a sight, had a witness pull a gun on one of these things. Mm-hmm. He said he got up to about 110 miles an hour, and the thing was keeping up with him. It had actually gone ahead of him and crossed over his hood again. And, he said it was the first time he really truly felt threatened, and then fired his weapon, which he felt was his best option, which he said he wasn't proud of doing. And he said he wasn't trying to embellish or heighten the theatrics, but he said I had to say it was just so god-awful and horrifying to him, and that he had no recourse, and he shot 12 rounds. And by the seventh or eighth, it had wrapped its wings and started descending. He said, I followed it down with four more rounds and it was gone. He was still shaking and distraught after he contacted me the next day. No, it was the same day, actually. And he said, he was truly upset. When I talked to him, he was still bothering him. And he said, I don't care how you use the story. He said, I'm perfectly willing to discuss what happened at any length. And he did. He talked to me and Tobias as well. And he did show pictures of a small dent on his truck where this thing hit. Uh-huh. And where it had hit the bumper. Now, he did pop it out, but it does, you can see where it was hit. Uh-huh. And the location specifically was in Pierce Township, Illinois, at Battle Creek, which is 1,500 foot east of Hinckley Road. So that that was a pretty dramatic sighting, and that's the latest one we have gotten. So that's what, three, four weeks ago. So and when we do get a witness like that who is not fearful about coming forward and giving their name and specifically and has no qualms about talking to other investigators, those are the best ones. So there's definitely something going on out there. You know, after all these years and people continually see these things, we're pretty convinced that there is something going on there.
Well, and it's like him, you know, the first couple sightings he had when he was trying to, you know, in his mind trying to rectify it, saying, oh, it might be a crane or something. But, I mean, people know what, let's be honest about this. People that live up in the more rural areas, they know what their birds look like. I mean, I was living up rural for a while. You know, you're forever putting bird seed down, trying to see what's going to come down and, you know, eat your bird seed. So, you know, you got the binoculars out the window, so you know what your area birds look like. So when something like this happens, you can pretty much go, nope, that's not an area bird.
Well, you know, the area is known for cranes. Now, yeah, I'm quite sure he has seen cranes around. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I guess, you know, when somebody sees something they don't recognize, the first thing you think is something that they're familiar with. And many times that's what we get. It's just like we've had many of these sightings people have described them as looking like the creeper from the Jeepers Creepers films because it's pop culture, something they recognize. So that's what they use as, you know, as what they saw. I've had many, many sightings where that reference has been used. And of course, many times people say that they look like a gargoyle or something similar with a bat-like wing. People describe these things and use something out of pulp culture or something they're familiar with as a description. So, but I guess the third time around, he had no choice but to realize that he was seeing something different, shooting at it.
Because part of the questionnaire that I use when I go out to do a prelim for a paranormal investigation is, do you watch, you know, the paranormal TV shows? If they say yes, then the next question is going to be, how does what you're experiencing compare to what you've seen on TV?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so yeah, that's understandable, completely understandable.
Well, you know, the paranormal is like that. I mean, many times we will get descriptions of something that's been pulp culture of a movie. Just like the what we call the Glimmer Man sightings of this these beings of like the Predator alien from the films, the Predator films. This is a phenomena that we have been investigating for almost a decade now. And many times that's what people describe it as, looking like the cloaked version of that alien. And in fact, we're involved with writing a book about the phenomenon now. But yeah, it makes you think if the original writers or the people who actually wrote the script or wrote the book or whatever they wrote actually had an encounter like that, and that's what they based it on. I think about that a lot. Many times you see a film that kind of resembles something that you've been investigating or something very close to what you've been investigating. You wonder, is it tied in somehow? Uh-huh. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you think about that, and people are going to laugh at me for this, but Star Wars, when they talk about training for the Force, and you look at these trainings and you look at what they're doing, and it's obviously somebody that has been involved in the psychic field that understands this stuff, and that's why they're able to really write this stuff up for the Force, too.
Yeah, I, you know, before 1977, when Star Wars was released, I think it was kind of one of those deals where people wouldn't even come forward to talk about those type of phenomena.
Right.
But I think Star Wars kind of set it off. I think the whole alien thing, even though there were other films and such and other stories, even with the Betty and Barney Hill phenomena, that case, I think Star Wars kind of set it off because it was more visual and people kind of related to it. And as time went on and the CG got better and now the digital and the computer generated stuff, and AI in particular, I think people are much more inclined to say, well, you know, it looked like that, using as an example. So, yeah, we get a lot of that.
It's like ghost hunting, too. I mean, when I started ghost hunting, really, really ghost hunting 18 years ago, leading up to that, there were shows like In Search Of, you know, and we had Unsolved Mysteries, and that was it. There wasn't anything like, oh, let's go into haunted hotels, you know, like those shows that have been on. But once Ghost Hunters hit, it started to become acceptable because people were sweeping it under the rug. You know, I remember going in when we were going to do our first investigation at the Wilden Opera House, and Ghost Adventures had just come out. And I remember going into the city council, you know, the city, to say, hey, look, we're going to be filming here. This is what's going on. And she says, are you like that show where they jump out the windows? And I said, no, we don't do things like that. She says, well, anyway, I think that stuff's cool. Go ahead. We'll sign you off on it. And that's when I started to see that turnaround, you know, even though they were still kind of hesitant about it. And now it's just something everybody could sit around the kitchen table and talk about.
Yeah, I mean, there's less inhibition about all this now. I mean, paranormal has become mainstream, whether it's ghosts, cryptids, or whatever, even aliens. And people seem to take certain aspects of films and things and kind of lock it in the brain. And when something happens, that's what comes out. I grew up back in, you know, the 60s with early 70s with In Search Of. But I know when Benny and Barney Hill, when their case first came out mainstream, like the mid 60s. Hey, I was fascinated. I was hooked. I mean, when I was that age, I knew there were some things going on with me as far as intuition. And of course, I lived near Gettysburg, so I was out in the battlefield a lot. And I saw a lot of weird things I just couldn't explain as a 9 or 10 year old. But of course, when, you know, that came and then the Patterson-Gimlin film was released, and then In Search Of kind of really put that on the map. Then the Boggy Creek thing and all this, we kept generating more and more sightings that started to be released into the media. And before we know it, we're where we are now, ghost hunters and then, you know, all that. So, So pop culture and media has really actually made things, I believe, much easier for us, but in a way it made it a little bit harder for us as well.
Exactly. I can tell you the Betty and Barney Hill movie scared the hell out of me because of that needle. The pregnancy test. They had that big old long needle. And I thought, ooh, God, no, you know. But yeah, I agree with you 100%. It has made acceptance of what we do a lot easier, but then again, with all the stuff now that they're focusing on, everything has to be demonic. It makes it a little bit harder for us too at this point.
Yeah, the whole demonic thing. I mean, I don't necessarily buy into the whole demonic thing. Evil's evil in my book. everybody concentrates on demons, and you know they want you to be like when you're doing a haunting investigation or either a poltergeist and have to explain to them what a poltergeist is and. You know, and they kind of went fast resolve of an issue, and it just doesn't work like that.
I mean,
there have been haunting. I had a haunting case, and I've written about and talked about that happened in Sioux City, Iowa, that I worked on for almost 11 years till it was finally resolved. And for the most part, I think a lot of it had to do with the actual victims themselves, because they got to the point where they just stopped letting it bother them. And they did have abilities. I mean, everybody in that family had abilities. And I think a lot of times when you do get a case like that, and I know it's happened to me many times, where the people who are having the issue do have abilities. Many times they don't realize it, but it will come out during an investigation.
Absolutely, absolutely. Now, when we talk about things like the Thunderbirds and, you know, those types of creatures, how do they differ from the Mothman?
Oh, well, the Thunderbirds look just like a natural creature, but they're just huge. Mm-hmm. Now, we have Thunderbird sightings, we have pterosaur sightings of some type of pterosaur, pterodactyl type being or creature. In certain areas, for the most part, but we've had a few here in Pennsylvania, the upper Midwest, down into the Midwest, into Texas, down into even out in the West Coast, out into Utah, and we've had a few in California as well over the years. Even historically, there have been some of these pterosaur sightings. Do we know what they are? No. You know, are they interdimensional travelers? They could be. Are they some type of time slip or some type of being that manifests through some type of portal from times back? You know, who knows? But they do show up, and many times people are pretty freaked out. But, you know, their descriptions are very, very descriptive. But as far as Thunderbirds go, of course, that was Native American tradition, First right. Nations and such. And it was part of their lore, but... Beyond that, I mean, people do still see these large birds, these cryptid birds. There have been instances, even here in the East Coast, where we've had sightings of these huge birds that would be standing on a regular road, maybe 12, 15 foot across, just huge, you know. They looked all natural, very natural, nothing indistinguishable about them other than their humongous size. So, you know, we kind of put those into the Thunderbird category, not necessarily attributing to the lore of these things show up during a storm or something, but people do see them.
Yeah. And when you think about the amount of wildlands out there, you know, the amount of woods that are out there, I mean, who are we to say that somewhere out there there's not a population of these things still existing?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I just talked about here in Pennsylvania for an example. You know, back in the mid to late 1800s, Pennsylvania was practically deforested. And because people cutting limp timber and, you know, building homes and using it for firewood and all that, I mean, you know. But now, and through the graces of the state, I mean, I just saw a statistic the other day where 59% of the state is forested now. And we've got open areas that basically people just don't know about. It's almost like wilderness. And who knows what's out there?
Right.
And I think there's a lot of parts of the United States, even though we do have issues with deforestation, I think more so here in the East, because of conservation and other attempts by a lot of the states, these areas are starting to look more like the original areas, and these creatures, for whatever reason, are showing up there. And of course, we have a lot of creatures that are repopulating the area. Coyotes and mountain lions and such moving east. The whitetail and other game is much more plentiful here than it had been for many, many decades. Mm-hmm. And there's plenty of food for them, and they just, you know, when other parts of the country are having sprawl and people moving in, they're moving east. Mm-hmm. And I believe, and I think it has panned out, that the eastern part of the United States, from top to bottom, from Florida to Maine, has been much more active with creatures that we just haven't seen for a long time.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's reports in Alaska. I saw this on the Alaskan Triangle. I love that show. It's one of the shows that I love. And about this guy that was driving down this road, and he saw these little dinosaurs cross the road right in front of him.
Yeah. Yeah, I've had sightings like that, particularly in Texas, southeast Texas, down into those areas south of San Antonio and north of Laredo. That area seems to be rife with a lot of these mini T-Rex-type sightings. We've had several sightings of those things. We've had them also in Utah. So there are areas where, you know, who knows what's showing. But we do get some of those sightings.
Out of all the cryptids that you have studied, which one's your favorite? You gotta have a favorite.
Definitely the Mothman or the winged humanoids. Okay. I mean, it's fascinating to me because I had an encounter back in 1988 here in Pennsylvania. And for whatever reason, many of the sightings that we're getting out in the Chicagoland area, Lake Michigan area, are very similar to what I encountered. And I just find that fascinating. I mean, they're different than the Mothman of Point Pleasant description. That being was more insectoid, moth-like, or and had the thick body and the inset eyes with the upper part of the body. And but what we are getting and what I believe I saw was more of the large winged being, bat wings, sometimes looking like an owl, but more so like a some type of emaciated, tall, emaciated creature with large bat wings that for the most part is usually dark in color. Does have legs, has detached or attached wings. They come in both. And a distinct head, though small, and many times the big red eyes. And they do have the ability to jettison into the air without even flapping their wings on occasion. They do some of maneuvers that are just unbelievable. But they just seem to show up. And, we continuously get these sightings. And for whatever reason, hopefully we're going to figure out what it is. Right. Now, this might be of interest to you because I know you're Hispanic, but 50%, over 50% of the sightings we've had of the Chicago Mothman phenomenon or in that area have been by witnesses of Hispanic descent.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's something we've been looking into more and more over the past year or so. So I think it's, I think it's just another part of the puzzle. For whatever reason. There's been so many different things involved with this phenomena. Maybe one day we'll figure it out. I don't know. Just had to wait and see.
Well, you know, one question that comes to mind, too, that I know people ask me is, as far as, like, you looking for these creatures, is it hard because, you have a general idea of what they look like, but you've never witnessed one yourself?
Yeah. Well, in other words, you mean somebody investigating it has never had an encounter?
Yeah, that's never had an encounter.
Well, I'd say 98% of the investigators have never had an encounter.
Right.
Many well-known investigators, I think of Stan Gordon in particular, he's never had an encounter with any type of Bigfoot or anything else. He's seen UFOs, but he's never had an alien encounter or a Bigfoot encounter, which he investigates. And most people on my team haven't had encounters either. So I don't find it unusual. I know that many people who do have encounters think it's kind of unusual that somebody involved with this that does have an interest in it has never had any type of encounter. Well, it's just like anything else. I mean, many people think of it as a hobby, but I kind of think of it a little bit more than that. I have been someone who has seen two different types of things I really can't explain.
Right.
Plus all the hauntings and such I've been involved with over the years. But it still fascinates me. And, of course, if I didn't love it, I wouldn't continue doing it.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. So from the start of investigating, say, a case like the Mothman, a sighting, how long does it take you from start to finish to get all the information you need and all that stuff?
It's usually pretty quick. As soon as I get a report, I'm on the horn with these witnesses many times within 30 minutes or an hour. And many times they call me. I mean, when you put Chicago Mothman or winged humanoid up on Google now, my name comes up, my number's there, so they're calling me right away. So we've been lucky in that aspect to get these reports quick. While it's fresh in the mind and, get their interpretation of what they saw. And look, I let the witnesses tell me before I do much of anything as far as asking questions. I have them tell me everything that they experienced or they believe they experienced. And then I go from that. And there are many times I go deep into an investigation to the point where I even try to see if they will embellish on it. In other words, try to make it sound better to satisfy me. And if that does happen, I will usually become very skeptical of the sighting. And we have called a few like that. But all in all, I think we're pretty good at what we do as far as this phenomenon goes. And like I said, we're up to 160 odd sightings now, where we believe are legitimate sightings. And there've been others that we just have, dropped because we just don't think they were legit.
If you get like more than one person that has made a sighting, do you interview them separately?
Many times, yeah, if we can. I mean, unless they're family. We will try to do it separately, even if the family or friends. I'll be honest with you, those are very good because a lot of times you get them separate. They'll tell you the exact same story. These experiences are really imprinted on the witnesses. It's just something they don't forget. I think more so with this phenomena as compared to like Bigfoot and a lot of others, where usually with a Bigfoot or a Dogman or something like that, they're not as close to the being as they are with these winged beings. I don't know if that's by design by the winged being or not, that they try to get close, that they're seen. They're not shy. There's all kinds of different aspects as to the way they show themselves or the way they make noises or feature themselves to the witness, but I'd say most of them are very close, and they do get a good, a good description and a good sight of what happened. Just like the last one I read to you, that was close and personal. So we do get those.
What is your ultimate hope for this field that you're in?
I hope it continues where people don't embellish on it. Even though I hate to say be more scientific about it, because I think a lot of what we do, science doesn't really enter into it. You've got to be more open-minded about it. And that's the whole paranormal. I mean, I'm not just talking about cryptids. I think investigators need to be more open-minded, more receptive to what people tell them. I have seen over the years where an investigator will go to a location or go to a witness and they will tell them something that's just incredible. And they'll just discount it right offhand. That's not the way I work. I let them tell me what they saw. I won't tell them out of hand that I just think they're full of crap. I mean, I just don't do that. I do the best I can to prove them right. But if it does get to the point where it's just impossible, then I will have a conversation with it. But most times, and we've been lucky like that, a lot of times the evidence, even though it's scant, does point to where they're telling us is true.
What do you say to people that want to get into your field?
Well, I prefer they not do it as a hobby. I know that's hard because people have to work and people do this and that and have other things, have families and such. I think me being retired and, working on my own, I've had the opportunity to do a lot of things, to see a lot of things and just, be to myself. And I've had the opportunity to work with some great people. I do tell younger folks who come to me and ask me about that, because I do get that question a lot, to try to hook up with people you can trust and people who have the same ideals you do and the same, thoughts about what you do, and be serious about it. But to be open-minded and, listen to the witnesses, how to take what they say to heart and then go from there. Any case you get involved with, and it doesn't matter what it is, when they call you or contact you and you get involved with their case, you're part of the case. As far as they're concerned, you are part of the case. And that's the way I approach it. You know, I just don't take the sighting or incident and try to brush it aside and get to it when I can. I try to get it, you know, try to continue on with all of them one time. It drives me crazy sometimes, but I tell you, it's the best way of doing it. And, you know, listen to the witnesses, and until you prove otherwise, what they say, you gotta believe it and do the best you can to work with what they give you.
Absolutely. So what's next for you?
I don't know. Whatever comes. I mean, I really don't. I really just take it as it comes, quite frank with you. I'm in a position now to where I get a lot of different things coming my way. And I'm able to contact people who are in an area where I'll get a report and have them go look at it. So I kind of depend on the people working with me a lot. But when we do local cases, many times it's us together, and we'll go out and do what we can and see what we can find and try to get answers. But I, as far as anything definitive, I can't really say. I just take what comes.
Absolutely. You talked about books that you wrote. I know you have quite a few out. Can you tell us a little bit about them?
Well, you know, I wrote five books early on that aren't in print anymore that related to cases I was getting. But then I wrote the Alien Disclosure Experiences Exposed Reality book, which was about alien investigations and encounters and abduction cases I had worked with over the years, over about 30 years. And I finally put that into a book. And then I kind of moved on from that. And I wrote about the Mothman case that started happening in Chicago. I wrote one book absolutely dedicated just to that. And then I wrote a book, Wing Cryptids, which half the book continues on with the saga in Chicago. But then I discuss other winged cryptids as well. The last book I put out was The Mean Humanoids, with the pale crawler humanoid phenomena that has seemed to be getting more and more prevalent. And right now I'm actually working with another individual on the Glimmer Man book, and I'm probably going, and I've been saying this for 2 years now, I'm probably going to do a cryptid canine book or two, and possibly another Chicago book if time permits.
Very busy, very busy. How can people find you, sir?
Well, you can go to my website at phantomsandmonsters.com. All the links and all the telephone numbers and emails are there. My email is lonstrickler@phantomsandmonsters.com. If they got a case or anything they want me to look into, or they have a story or something, an encounter that they had, feel free to contact me. And the team is the Phantoms of Monsters 14 research team. As well, I have a YouTube channel, Phantoms of Monsters Radio. Just search that and it'll come up on YouTube. And I do a live show every Friday night where I discuss my cases.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on. It's always fun to have you here.
Oh, I appreciate you having me.
We'll have to get you back on sometime.
You take care.
All right, Lon. Have a great one.
Take care.
Okay, it is always fun to have him on, and wow, this thing. Okay, here we go. One of those nights. Hey, you're back already. See, it's been 3 months. How you doing? Yeah, okay. I'll see you later. Okay, finally. I can see why the internet is slow, though. There's a lot going on in the U.S. right now. You know, New York case and things going on like that. So, I wasn't expecting the internet to hold up really well at all today. because the news cycle, but it did right up until the end. It's always fun to have him on. I've known him for a long time. I'm fascinated by cryptids. Like I asked him, you know, what his favorite was. Obviously, my favorite is probably the Sasquatch, because I live in Northern California, and that's what you hear more about. In fact, I was watching Barbara Shoup. I was watching her on Facebook today, and I guess somebody had reported that they've been camping. I keep sinking. they've been camping, and something shook their RV overnight that they were staying in. I had a cousin who was camping up in Oregon many, many years ago, and they had the same thing happen with their camper, and they couldn't explain what or who, you know, shook the thing. It just shook it. Could have been an earthquake. Who knows? But anyway, it was a similar kind of thing that Barbara Shute was looking at. Okay, tomorrow we'll be back. Friday, casual Friday. Medium Nancy Matz, and this is going to be interesting. Did the dead hubby possesses wife's new lover? We'll have to see what that's about, but that's what she told me she wants to talk about. So there we go. We're talking about that. Dead hubby possesses wife's new. Hey, that could be like a Peter Piper thing, huh? Peter Piper picked a peck. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, dead hubby possesses wife's new lover. So that'll be tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. Pacific, right here, same place, California Haunts Radio. So be sure to be here. Nancy loves it when you're here. Nancy loves it when you talk amongst yourselves in the chat room. She just loves it. She loves it. All right. You know, if you like the show, share it with 5 people. If you hated the show, share it with 5 of your enemies. We're equal opportunity here at California Haunts Radio. Just trying to get the name of the show out there and get people to watch. Hope you guys had a great time watching. And again, you know, we do run on donations to keep our operations going. And we're about $60 short this month. So if you guys could find it in your heart to help us out, that would be great. That's paypal.me/CaliforniaHaunts. And it's also Venmo, and then just type in California Haunts, and you'll find us. But, you know, I don't like to ask, but, you know, that's just how it is. We operate as even though we're not officially a nonprofit, we make no money. Essentially, we make no money from these shows. This is it, right? Just we live off donations. That's the bottom line. Okay, guys, I will see you tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. Pacific, and I hope you had a great night, a great time. I did. I love talking about cryptids and stuff. And we've got some great guests lined up for next week already, too. So I will see you tomorrow where we're talking with me and Nancy Matz. So let me get the right page up here. I got all kinds of buttons to push. Always buttons in my life. And I will see you guys tomorrow, 6:30 p.m. Pacific. Have a great rest of your evening.